myself. Good evening, everybody, and welcome to a very special episode of the Edge of Futures podcast. You will notice a few differences. There's many more joining us straight from the screen and nobody waiting backstage. And we're not going to do our usual waffle. We're not going to discuss our week. We've already done it, and we're interested to kickstart the last podcast of this season and this academic year. It is June. Hopefully this will go out in June. Maybe July. Who knows? If I'm on the podcast, it could be August by the time I get round to it. But hopefully it goes out on the next one. If you're listening and watching, welcome. This focus, like we did last year, we summed it up last year and focused on mental health. This year, we're going to be talking about community. We've got some wonderful guests on that you'll see on the screen, or you'll hear from if you're on the podcast, talking about the building of a community, the importance of community, learning networks, personal learning network, PLN, whatever you want to call it. We're going to deep dive into some really great themes and lots of insights. Stick with us. There's going to be a lot of unmuting and muting, a lot of people hopefully having a conversation like we would do in a pub, where people will talk over each other. They're not being rude. They're just keen and I've got a lot of things to say. So, Dan, Ben, we're not going to waffle, but you all right?
Yeah, good, mate. Good. Good to be here. It's good to be rounding off another year, going into a bit of a summer break, last one before the summer break. And it's good to be able to talk about this topic that we obviously talked about at our event up in Leeds in... Was it in May? It was in May, wasn't it? Yeah, May 4th. And we talked about this idea about a community and developing a community. So it's good to be able to hear from people that are like pros in this world, and we'll be able to talk about it. So yeah, I'm looking forward to it. Dan, you good?
Yeah, I'm all good. In hot Surrey at the moment.
Can I just ask? Are you at Ian Nairn's house with those curtains?
You know what you're talking about. All good. I'm looking forward to it. I'm just looking below me here, and we've got some amazing amazing guests that I just can't wait to start talking to about their ideas around community and how we... I feel like at the moment EdTech's going through a bit of a revival in terms of interest and kind of, I think all of us who've been in EdTech have for years now kind of thought, is EdTech going to be the thing that revolutionizes education, that really kind of pushes education into the 21st century and helps us prepare our students for the world that they're actually going to be going into? And I feel like more than ever over the last year or so, we're winning a lot more people over with this. I'm excited that we're now talking about building a community around that. It feels like the next step, especially for the Edge of Futurists, to start expanding what we do and excited to see where it goes.
I said we won't waffle. We're 4 minutes in. Sorry for our guests waiting. Not behind the scenes, literally just waiting for us. But we'll go around, we'll do a bit of an intro, and then we'll kick off. We'll start, based on everybody can see, if you're listening. We've already done the order. We'll start with Al.
Well, hello, folks. Lovely to be here. I'm Al Kingsley. Just starting to get the hang of this EdTech lot. 30 years in EdTech CEO, 20 years in governance as a MAT chair and also an AP chair, and passionate, as many will know, about all things EdTech and absolutely community.
Wonderful. Thanks, Al. Louise?
Hi, everyone. Thank you for inviting me, especially amongst everyone. This esteemed panel that I can see in front of me. Some people I haven't seen for ages, so it's just really nice to see everyone. So, as you know, my name is Louise Jones, and I currently work for ThingLink, where I'm Director of Communities and Partnerships. But I'm more so inclined to be identified with the charity work that I'm doing at the moment, and I'm volunteering for an organisation called Locate International. And we aim to find missing people and also those who might be unidentified. And I'm absolutely enthralled with the community of volunteers that we've built up there, 300 or so people, which is just fantastic. But my EdTech history goes right the way back to when I worked in the Highland Council, was responsible for digital learning and teaching, and then a stint at Google, and then over to ThingLink. So I kind of was gamekeeper turned poacher, or the other way around, I think it is. But I've certainly enjoyed the role that I've played in all of those jobs, particularly around bringing people together in communities.
Wonderful. Ian?
Yeah, great to be here and to see the gang together. You know, it's a fantastic thing, isn't it? Louise, you made me think about when I started. So 87, I did my teacher training, and I was the only one who liked playing around with things that had plugs on. Nobody else in education liked it. And so I just fell into that role. So I've been doing the job really since 87. And a bit like Al, I think I'm just trying to get the hang of it. But also I think it's a bit easier now to do the job we do, which is persuading people to use it and persuading people to value. That's changed. I'm doing a few things, helping a few schools out. And the other thing that I did with young Dan recently, removing digital headaches. That's the new thing I'm trying to do. And then the previous one I did with Al. So, you know, and that's what's keeping me off the streets at the moment.
Ian, now I know why you call me young Dan. I think I was born in 1986. So just before you went into teaching.
I know. And so, I know what old I was when I went into teaching. So that's why young Dan, mate.
12. I think you were 12, Ian.
The interesting bit, and I say this on a regular basis, Ian might have been in his teacher training since 1987, but still looks younger than me and Dan.
Yeah.
So literally definitely had an easier paper round.
Well, you've had a tough paper round, haven't you?
Mine's been uphill. And I was carrying, literally, I was from a council estate, but I was delivering to all the posh estates. I was carrying the broadsheets. Every single really? One was about.
And they're heavy, thick. Mate. They are heavy.
They're heavy. Look at Steve.
And it probably rained as well.
It did. Always. We'll bring in Lawrence. Thanks, Ian.
Hey, thank you for having me. I'm really excited to be on today. And as you know, really passionate about community. So, yes, my name is Lawrence Tajani. And I was just thinking about what Ian said about 1987. I was just about one as well. So I'm looking forward to learning from you as well, Ian and Al, because I'm at the other end of my journey as I'm being a founder of an EdTech professional development agency. But what I'm really passionate about is a social enterprise that I started 2 years ago. And that's more about working with young people from underserved communities to really empower them to reach their full potential. And that's through actually being exposed to different communities and being part of communities that maybe they wouldn't be able to necessarily touch base with. Yeah. So really looking forward to this conversation.
Thanks, Lawrence. Brilliant there. Abid?
Hey, everyone. It's me, the A, B, I, and the D. You know me, I love everything community. I didn't mean for that to rhyme, but hey-ho, that's the way we roll. But yeah, I'm Abid Patel. I'm an IT director at Multi-Academy Trust here in London. I love Ian's tagline there about removing digital headaches. And on the subject of 1987, I suddenly feel really old. I was 6 years old in 1987. And I feel like, you know, everyone else was either not born or only 1 year old and stuff like that.
You don't look it, Abid. You don't look old.
41 in 2 weeks' time. So, times are getting on. But I come back to your tagline about removing digital headaches. I feel like sometimes I've always called myself the reverse blocker. Sometimes I feel like I'm creating digital headaches by just introducing digital in places where digital has kind of not been a thing. But awfully passionate about creating those positive digital experiences within school communities and kind of bringing it from the perspective that you don't normally see from the IT side of things. So trying to break ourselves out of that little dark corner where we're just blocking all the social media and YouTube and all the fun stuff on the internet. So very, very passionate about community for anyone who knows me, and really excited to learn from the rest of this amazing group today.
Yeah, and I think, let's be honest, Abid has the most community selfies of any person globally. Apparently more pictures have had more people have had pictures with Abid than they had Messi or Ronaldo. I heard a stat announced this week, so don't know if it's true, but apparently most I want to say papped man, but he's the most papping man. Literally, if you haven't had a selfie with a conference with Abid, you're a nobody. To put it out there, so that's the task for everybody.
Wow, how to isolate an audience, Steve? How to build a community?
I'll be honest. I guarantee everybody that's listening has had a selfie with Abid. There cannot be. And if you're listening and you want to respond on social media or anything else, if you haven't, Abid, can you go find him and picture? Obviously, pay for the flights if it's anything to do with America. It's still next week, isn't it? So Abid will be glad for those flights wherever it is. But no, wonderful, and definitely. Not least, but last on the lineup is Georgina.
Hey guys, thanks for having me. So excited to be here with everyone, and looks like I'm meeting some new people today. So that's part of the reason we're here today, and that's great. So thanks for having me. As many will know already, I'm basically an international education leader, and I've been supporting schools with their digital transformation for over a decade now across most of EMEA. Also some North America, Mexico, et cetera. And I've recently just stepped outside of the classroom, and I'm building my own product. So I'm really excited. I wanted to sort of scale my impact a bit. So watch this space, and exciting times ahead. Definitely an exciting time to be in education is right now. So yeah, thanks for having me and looking forward to learning with everyone.
Great stuff. I'm gonna go direct to Ian. 1987 was four. For somebody who started a digital community, I suppose, or a community focused and conversations around digital in the independent school sector and everything else, why did you feel at that point, Ian, that it was so important, and why do you think community is so important now as the digital age has grown?
A part of the ISC digital thing that we did, we started that in 2006, and we were running conferences every year and pushing bulletins out. And because I was working full time, I didn't get into schools to see the result. You know, you have a great conference, everyone comes and thinks it's amazing. I realized when I left teaching that there wasn't really any significant impact from having those conferences. And what there needed to be was, and just like I was doing in school, deeper conversations. This is about deep learning. And you don't get that from having a conference. And even though it's a brilliant 40-minute thing, it might change something, you may take one idea. But I really felt there was something necessary to change that. So now we're doing these round tables, having these conversations, and trying to take a lot of time over discussing one thing. And that, for me, it's having an impact. And I'm getting into schools and seeing that some of this stuff is making an impact. I think particularly the one we did, Dan, even though it's not finished yet, it's already had a significant impact. So that's why, and it's ironic that we're doing this, or perhaps an accident, but the next one I'm doing is called Learning Platforms Building Learning Communities. Because I think we've got to look at how. And there's a huge variety of people who do this. So like I'm chatting to Matt Jessup. So Dan and I were over with Matt Jessup, and I was chatting to him, and Matt says, I don't have a learning community. I don't have a learning platform. I said, it's in his random way that he does it, by chucking information out and making sure he connects and communicates with everyone. He has a learning platform that is affecting his learning community. And the other example at the other extreme is Thinkwe, the hub people, they've built a learning platform in Wales and in Egypt. And that's the thing that's bringing everyone together. But it doesn't really matter what the platform is. All it matters is that you have the passion, the intention, and you make sure that it works. So I hope that answers your question, Steve. I just felt there had to be something deeper and more significant to tackle these really wicked problems that it doesn't seem that we can come up with easy answers.
It's yeah, absolutely. It's interesting because we use that phrase social media, and actually the irony is that it probably makes us, even though it's a brilliant tool, and I do it for my job, it can almost make us less sociable, because we the face-to-face, the the real building of community. And yes, we have people, and we know that we'll talk about the power of Twitter and the power of the socials to create community. But actually, it's interesting as well that need for combating that element. One of the things that we want to talk about today is how community can help us deal with the issues around isolation and people feeling like they're islands on their own. They're the only person in their school that talks about technology, or they're the only person that's trying to do that. And Louise, I know that more broadly around community, rather than just about technology, that the idea of combating those feelings of isolation and disconnection is something that you're really passionate about. How can we do that, and how can we build a community that helps deal with that level of isolation and disconnection?
Yeah, it was really interesting in Highland when we first started rolling out our strategy for digital learning and teaching. But before that, we had to really create a community of people that were the kind of willing ones who wanted to be brave enough to take those steps. So, and especially when people are living in quite rural and remote areas. So I think it was quite easy at first to find who those people were. And I visited the schools to actually speak to people in person, and then contacted them and said, you know, we're building this community and we'd love you to be part of it. And I think people instantly felt a sense of belonging, because they'd been going on, or in their words, kind of banging on about things for such a long time in their schools that people had just turned off to them. They didn't want to hear anything about it. So to actually come together and find like-minded people really gave them a sense of belonging. And once we had those people on board and worked with them to really play a significant role within that community, then I think it helped us. And I think I've seen that thing that says, you know, culture eats strategy for breakfast. And I think the culture was developed by the members of those communities, the people that were brave enough to put their heads above the parapet and say, yeah, we think this is worth doing, and offering that support to each other in that community. But, you know, if you kind of look at the very essence of what was important about that, I feel it's so crucial to think about accessibility in that context as well. So I tried to create ways in which people could join, and it was accessible as possible. So, for example, some people were quite happy to speak up loudly. Some people wanted to only think about responses and then type in a keyboard, you know, their responses. And we needed to have the accessibility tools in place and make sure that any kind of resources were accessible. Any videos weren't long, they were short videos. And we did this all originally in a really clunkiest old platform at that time called Glow. So it was really, really, it was a really, really good way of being able to bring people together. And the platform didn't matter so much then, but obviously we've got the platforms now that are so much easier for people to join. But I know we couldn't have done what we did in Highland without those people.
Al, do you want to come in there?
Yeah, it's just an interesting one. The kind of conversation started rightly with the digital being that disconnect in some regards, or taking the human element out. I've always felt that much of what we do, the digital sometimes can be the leveler or the introducer to. And you mentioned Matt Jessop up in the Lake District. You know, many people around the country would know Matt and what their school do and what they stand for, but very few have probably visited. And I think the key that EduFuturists has been a fantastic example of, and others see, is that actually sometimes you need a conduit, a place for people to feel there's something to join up with, there's common values, and it becomes the catalyst to have a reason to meet people face to face and find out more and learn from them. And in the same way, I think within our school communities, you know, many of us, I'm sure, will have encountered the conversations about how do we engage with our hard to reach families that aren't always there at the school gate. And yet actually being forced to offer a kind of a hybrid mix of ways to engage with the community, different ways align for different people, in the same way as children sometimes prefer to report a concern digitally rather than face to face. And I think we need to recognize that digital doesn't replace human, but it can be a really useful introducer.
Yeah, for sure. And interestingly there, I think it's that using it as I've heard lots of people talk about that technology being an enhancer, like you said, and an introducer, that concept of it isn't a replacement. And we talk about that idea of substitution being the first start of use of technology, but it never needs to remain there, does it? And interestingly, I know that provoking and poking the bear around social media and the power of it, actually, where I was talking about how sometimes it can be doesn't always lead to deep community. Actually, Abid, I know that you are a champion. People you never met in person, you became really good friends with, and actually have supported through difficult times as well, haven't you? So I wonder if you could maybe talk at that and the power of social media from a community perspective.
It's interesting about the point around isolation. And that was pretty much what started my journey. Is I've always felt, especially being an IT person in a school, you know, for the vast part of my career, I was a one-man band. And, you know, when you're trying to drive digital change, that can be a very challenging thing. And for me, the social media thing was very much about just trying to share getting people to understand what it is that we do. Because I think if you speak to an awful lot of school leaders, even today, and you ask them, do you really know what your IT guy, whether they're your own employed IT person or your managed service provider, what do they actually do on a day-to-day basis? You know, other than the break fix that you see and the reactive nature of the job that they're seeing, do you really understand what's going on? And the social media journey for me was about sharing the mundane and boring things that what I thought was mundane and boring. This is what we've done behind the scenes, because I'd have lots of things where I've spent years and years and years on a project that has streamlined a whole load of processes behind the scenes, and yet the end user has no idea what it is that we've done. And so that was kind of it for me, is where it was kind of like, I just want to find like-minded people. I want to find people who can understand and appreciate the everyday struggle. And that's how the Twitter journey started for me. It was just kind of just sharing and finding people who kind of understood that, but also people who didn't understand the IT and saw the value that progression and that innovation kind of brought to education as a whole and to people. And, you know, that helped me to connect to, you know, wonderful group of people that we see here today, and the wonderful community that I have on my Twitter followers and the people that I follow. And the tough times, yes, absolutely. You know, when the pandemic hit, you know, us digital champions, shall we say, probably felt an awful lot of pain as we were forced to go remote learning. And it was kind of, we've been shouting about all of this wonderful remote digital learning possibilities for ages, and now suddenly it's like no one wanted to listen back then, and now everyone's like, why are you not helping us with it, sort of thing. And you know, it just by chance, just through sharing these struggles, that community came together, and we formed what became Global GG. And that kind of just formed out of I'm delivering a training for my staff today on how to use Google Drive. And then someone across the pond in the States is, I'm delivering the very same training on how to do Google Drive. And then someone in Far East Asia is, I'm delivering training on how to do Google Drive. And it's like, why are we all repeating the same training? And I've been to your training session. You know Google Drive better than I do, but I know Gmail better than you do, sort of thing. Why don't we just collaborate and do it together? Why are we're all talking about Google Drive, the same thing. We're all talking about the same platforms. Why don't we just share that effort so that we're not having to repeat ourselves over and over and over? And so that's kind of how that community started. And it was amazing how people just kind of joined in. But I'm so grateful to this day for all of the educators around the world who became part and are still part of Global GG and are still part of the Slack channel that we have today that is just, you know, active every day, and we're still collaborating and sharing with each other. And none of that could have happened if it wasn't for the social media connection. Because like I said, I've still not met some of these people in person, you know, 3 years on from March 2020. And yeah, you know, some of these people are some of our closest friends. We're you know, best friends at times and things like that. And, you know, we're there for each other through anything work related, but also we share the personal struggles and stuff like that. And, you know, that for me just shows the value of the social media. And I feel like social media gets a real negative press because you see in the media all of the negativity behind social media. And I'm really passionate about promoting the positivity that has come through for me and these communities through that, those social media connections and the community that came out of it.
It's really interesting, I think, around what are people gathering around, I guess. So when we talk about community, is it, and I suppose we've probably all got different experiences of this, but is it around a shared purpose? Does a community have to have a shared purpose? Could it have several different purposes where we're supporting each other through those purposes? I'm just wondering, does anyone want to jump in? Yeah, Georgina?
Just jump in.
Then. Yeah, sorry, Lawrence.
Yeah, I've just been listening to everyone, and I think the first words or my thoughts were, what does community mean? What is that about? And the kind of words that came out to me were connections, right? It's really important that. And then Louise touched on belonging. You know, those are two kind of words that I feel are very important when we are discussing communities. And the foundations are about the people as well. You know, without the people, there are no communities. So if we put those together in terms of, you know, belonging, you know, connections, and the people first, then the communities start to actually grow stronger and actually got a strong foundation, to be honest about it. And I think you then touched on about, you know, do they need to have a common interest? Some of the most weirdest communities that have been created that I've been a part of have actually, I just needed a place to whinge, you know, and touched on what Abid said about, you know, I've been an IT director of, like, actually it just started about us whinging about how can I push my school forward? Why can't we get that going? And then after that, it develops into kind of actually, how do we start to become part of the solution? You have these goals that start to formulate and actually help drive forward the stuff that you are whinging about. Well, actually, you know, just letting off a bit of stress about. Let's not say whinging, it sounds a bit negative, right? Just de-stressing in the groups. So just going back to that is that I think it's connection, people, and actually just having a safe space. Actually, I'm gonna change that from a safe space, because a safe space is okay, a brave space, because being able to go to a place and actually put your viewpoint across in a community, no matter how small it is or how big it is actually, you want to be a brave space and actually say what your point is across that. And actually being your unapologetic self as well in part of a community. Sorry, I jumped in there. I think I'm gonna go over to Georgina now. I'm not trying to take over the show either.
No, it's good. That was super. That was amazing. I think it made me think of, I was watching a short video of Stephen Bartlett on LinkedIn, I think yesterday, where he was talking about shifting the kind of focus of, he was talking about a business, but he was saying if you start in a business, those first few employees are the business. It's not you've got a business and then you're bringing people into it. They literally are the business. And I think the same can be said about the community. It's not like right, let's create a community and it's this kind of ethereal thing that people are going to join. It is literally the people. Georgina, do you want to come in?
Yeah, I don't mind, thanks. And I really appreciate what Lawrence said about Be Brave Spaces. I know a few of us were recently in South Africa, and Ken Shelton also really advocates for Be Brave Spaces. So definitely connect with him if you want to learn more about those. I'd say from an international perspective, I'd say that one of the key things that I've taken away is that people exist in their bubble, and rightly or wrongly so. You grow up in a space, you go to school in a space, you work in a space. You know, I might not be the normal one who travels to a new country every few years. But that being said, what I see is people are off the grid. So people who exist, exist in communities if those exist locally. And the grid is, I like to think of it as comfort zones. We talk sometimes in education about breaking out of the comfort zone and breaking out of the box. And I like to think about expanding the comfort zone and expanding the area. And the same with idea of networks and professional learning networks is, how are we expanding our grids to include new ideas, new lenses, new perspectives? So I think the biggest takeaway is, yes, when I go to new countries, is encouraging educators, leaders to get on to social media, on Twitter, on LinkedIn, and share. Some teachers have gotten new jobs in other countries as well because of that. You know, when you start to put yourself out there, and I often get asked in LinkedIn, like, how, Georgina, do you get invited to go and speak in these different countries? And it's, as all of us know well on this call, it's sharing our story, right? And it's advocating for things that we're passionate about. And people will connect into your passion and they will reach out and say, hey, can you come and share that? And so it's just keeping that loop going. The reason for my global network is just that, is keeping in contact and creating those small networks that actually feed in and feed off each other into bigger networks. So my biggest thing is, if you feel that you're alone, you're not alone. There's loads of networks out there in so many countries all over the world. And start local if you want, start small, but do encourage each other. And then when you hop into that network, hop in, there's always something new to learn from somebody. Yeah. It's like an exchange of ideas.
Yeah, for sure. And I think there's a big thing there around how do we get to that point of how do you find these spaces is part of it. And then tied of, like, how do you find the spaces where you can be your authentic, brave self, and you can be a brave space that we, like you mentioned about Ken, I was going to talk about Ken, because he talks about mirrors and windows, and it's really important that our communities, that we can see people like us, and we can see through as possibilities of what could be, and wherever you are in the world. And I think there's a lot of work that needs to be done in terms of that sense of the values, and how do I see myself in this space, but then out about finding a place where you can connect authentically. I don't know if anybody wants to kind of go at that. Al, you look like you're good to go.
Yeah, I mean, like, a lot of the comments shared, and particularly Georgina's, really resonate with me, because I always feel there's two halves to community for me. There's one half, which I think we're all somewhat driven to, looking for people with common values. And actually, when it comes to looking for solutions, there's that empathy base. You know, I think as human beings, it doesn't matter whether it's our sports team, our faith, or other things, we all like being part of something where there's some kind of commonality. But I've always felt when it comes to a digital community, half is about people who get it and have similar experiences, and you can share and cross-pollinate. And then the other half is not having just that one echo chamber, but also those people that might challenge different thoughts and different approaches, which for me is much more the learning side of things. So I do think it's really important that, I think no matter what your PLN, you're always looking for new, interesting people, new, interesting ideas to continue to develop that. I think Abid's point is really important, that we've been really lucky that many of the spaces where we talk about education and technology and the periphery topics are done very much in the spirit of educators. So they're supportful, they're nurturing, people are nice. And many people's experiences are, people can be really harsh and critical when they disagree with your perspective or view. So I think it's about actually stakeholders all having a common mindset, that it's not about scoring points, but it's about sharing ideas and collaborating. And you can't stick on one. I mean, I like my Twitter, but I also like communities like EduFuturists and some of the different other activities and groups alongside those face-to-face events where you can come together and just talk about life before and after the order of talking about technology or education. So I think it's really important that we have that mixed stake in our community.
Yeah, and just on that one, and I think It's an interesting one when I know friends that have been on social media and different communities and they've never posted, but have learned so much. And I think some of these spaces are for different people and different ways and different focuses. I think some people just want to learn. Some people just want to, I don't know, I keep wanting to say the word voyeur, but you know, try and move away from that. Because sometimes it's as a bad word, but I think it's that thing of come in, listening, and not having to always contribute. Louise?
I think they're called enthusiastic lurkers.
Is that what it is? That sounds better than voyeur in this day and age. So, yeah, enthusiastic lurking is something that I have many friends that do it positively, but literally take so much from it. And I think that's what we have to face, that people get so many different things from communities and groups and collectives that it isn't just about contributing. Their contribution could actually just be been there and actually sometimes for those people you don't always know the impact, because they might be then going to sharing their learning with different people where they feel that they can have a voice when there's less people or at a dinner table. I just think so many different ways to judge how active a community is and how engaged people are in the community, rather than just how many times has somebody contributed or a post or anything else. And is there anybody that's a lurker on here? I won't say voyeur, but anybody that's a lurker?
I'm in a few communities where I'm not as active. And I think it goes back to what I mentioned before. Do I feel like I belong? Do I feel like my voice is, you know, heard in that group? So I do that sometimes as well. And I think, Steve, you mentioned a point that I think potentially I'd like to challenge, in the sense that, you know, you said something along the lines of, you know, that they feel more comfortable with their voice in a different community. Is that an issue with the current community of how do we amplify those voices? And if so, how do we do that?
Yeah, I agree. I'm glad you challenged it, because some people, like, you know, Abed, we've been in different, and Lawrence, we've been in different communities where actually, for students and for staff, if they don't identify them with the people that are always the heavier communicators, and actually they might feel that they objectively have to be part of that community, feel like, oh, well, that's just part of the process, but actually, do they really want to contribute? I agree.
Was that the ice cream van, by the way, in the background? See, yeah, love it.
Yeah,
love
literally.
It. The community is all about an ice cream van. If you have an ice cream van, you're going to have a community. You're going to get people
just on that one. Yeah, the ice cream man is I absolutely love him. Great guy. Text card, day and age, digital. I've got two young children. They now know when he's playing music, that means he's run out of ice cream.
Yes, I say the same thing.
That is a rule. He loves to park outside my house just as my children have eaten dinner. And we always say, eat your dinner first and you can have your ice cream. He does it on purpose now, and I have a personal relationship with him. He's part of my community. Just going back to that point, it is the ice cream van. I've got the window open. It's boiling. The kids are playing outside in the pool, paddling pool, not that posh. And the ice cream van is driving around. But yeah, I think, how do we build that then, Lawrence? How do we, when somebody joins a community, how do we, or anybody actually, how do we create that shared purpose? How do we create that that space where people do feel comfortable, where they see and recognise that they can have a voice if they're new to it or just joining? I'm interested if anybody's got any.
Yeah, well, we've got practice with this, haven't we? I mean, most of us have worked in a school in some way, and schools are quite good at having a vision, clarifying that when you join, there's an induction process, you know, and you know, I'm really enjoying what everyone's saying, but fundamentally, and I know we're all unique and beautiful in our own way, but we can thrive on the connections and the relationship, you know, and it's something that makes the big journeys that we're on, the hard work that we have to do in our roles, that sense of community and those relations, those connections, they make it easier possible and they lubricate what we do. But I don't think we need to reinvent. I think what we need to do is look at the bright spots of how people build community and how they welcome people in and how they make them feel a part of it as quickly as possible. You know, and it's pretty straightforward. I think
yeah,
we don't need to reinvent the wheel on this, Steve.
Yeah, I think just speaking about face-to-face stuff and conferences, and somebody said taught me this tactic of when you join a discussion group, and people still tend to, even if they've got a drink in their hand at the end, they always stand in a circle. Don't know how, I don't know whether that's the beginning of the time or where that's come from, but always make sure that when you come in, nudge to the left or the right and create space next to you, so that actually if somebody else is outside of it, there is a gap to, so they don't say, oh, do you mind me join? And I don't know who I heard it from, and I don't know if anybody's done that, but how do we create those face-to-face or online? How do we create that so we're nudging to the left or the right to create a gap so people feel that there is a welcoming space to that community? And I don't know if anybody wants to talk to that.
I would dive in and say, I mean, I think many of us would probably have modeled something similar. But I think there's two parts to being involved in the community. One is to contributing, and maybe you're an energetic lurker, but for many, you're contributing and sharing. And the second is to be willing to be a voice for others, to actually invite others, push them to the front, share stuff that they're doing. And I think that's incumbent on all of us, but it's easier said than done. I don't think any of us will ever say that every time we've been at any kind of collaborative event, we've been sufficiently mindful of that. But I think it's the sum of the parts. I mean, the whole reason that these lovely faces around the group here is because many of us kind of make a point of going out of our way to try and give others a voice, because actually in doing so, we also learn from them, you know, and that's kind of the give and take of it. And I think that's the measure of communities. It's no different to talking in our schools about our aspirations for our learners or our community. If they walk through the school door and it doesn't reflect the community they come from, and the young people doesn't reflect the world that they come from, why would they aspire to spend all day in that happy place? You know, and I think the same is in any community. If it reflects what your experiences are and people value your opinion as much as anybody else, then it becomes self-fulfilling.
Great stuff. And thanks, Al. Louise?
I agree with everything that Al's just said, particularly about the makeup of the community and having that kind of vision. But I think also we've become better at respecting everyone's contributions, whether it be an online forum, whether it be an online chat. And I do think technology's had a part to play in that, the way that we can give some likes and stars and hearts and these kinds of things. And I know that they might be frill and fluff and seem a bit silly, but it does help when we're having, and I go back to the community of the charity that I'm working with, because I think that's probably one of the most authentic communities I'm in at the moment, apart from this one. But, you know, you've got people there that are quite shy, maybe not used to speaking in online forums. And we're using Zoom, and we have breakout rooms so we can go into smaller groups, and each smaller group's got a specific kind of purpose. But you can see people just genuinely love it when there's some hearts and some likes that come on the screen, you know, and I do think that we have got better at respecting everyone's contributions and celebrating the contributions that people make as well. And that comes through the culture and ethos of your community as well. And if you're in a role where you're a leader of that community, the way that you're welcoming everyone in speaks volumes. And I learned so much just from being in other communities and the way that they're run, whether they're run badly or whether they're run well. I always take something away from it. It's like if you guys go to a conference and you see a conference that's really well done, you'll take some learning from that, just as you will from a conference which has just been awful. I'm not naming and shaming, but I saw some of the worst presentations I've ever seen in my life this week at a conference. I think it stems from that kind of welcome and that way that we're valuing contributions, and don't ignore the tech that you can use in doing that, I guess. Sorry.
I agree. And interestingly, like, I think everybody's, only if everybody's Googling what conferences have been on this week. But
I thought you were going to say, interestingly, I presented to Louise this week. And I was like, oh my God, that's a bit embarrassing.
No, I think it's interesting about like the being intentional, because sometimes I think we are, we might be misinformed, and we might be, we just have always, it might be accidental and default, but we actually need to be intentional and designed around that, don't we? And I think some of the stuff that we're talking about in terms of inclusion, because we are using that phrase, aren't we, and diversity, actually what we've got to do is be intentional about that. And Al talked about that, is about, I love that what you said about pushing people forward who wouldn't normally speak or who haven't had a voice previously. We have got to be intentional about that. And that for me is super important from a community perspective, is that I have no problem in any room, in any setting, as many of you'll know, pushing myself forward and getting people hearing what I'm saying because of my nature and my character, but also because of the privilege that I hold. That's not the same for everybody. And so we have to be intentional about making it so that it's a place where we can do that. And that's authentic community, isn't it? Where you are hearing from a range of different voices and spaces.
Can I say that one of the really impressive examples of community leadership that I've seen in the last few years was with the Google Trainers group. And I think many people on this call are in that group as well. But there was one specific person, May, and she was really transparent in her intent. She was authentic. She didn't come across as just being there to sell a product or as a marketing exercise. She genuinely came across as wanting to share her experiences and her life in exchange for creating a safer, braver community. And I think that was a really, really good example that I've seen recently.
I agree. And Lawrence, you were going to jump in there, were you?
Yeah, no, totally agree with what you just said there. And I was just literally giving you the thumbs up now when you were just dropping some knowledge on that. I was like, yes, that's it. Absolutely. And I think if we think about the community again, I saw something I've been seeing lately at conferences, and it says the future of education, you know, is always in the topic of it. And then you go and look at the speakers and you're saying future education, and it's not a diverse panel. So how can you feel part of that community or feel you can engage in that conversation? Are you saying that the future of education is only held by certain gatekeepers? So I think it's about actually being very intentional and actually just double checking. Like, I can get sometimes, but okay, might have missed that, but double checking, because actually there is so much to be learned from diverse voices in settings. And I've been privileged to be in a range of different communities where actually I just love to sit there and listen and learn from different people. So I think it's very important to be intentional if we're going to have diverse and inclusive communities. And I think also when we set up these communities, I take for example a community that I've been working on with the diverse trainers, is that actually my aim was to set up a community where other people communicated from diverse backgrounds. But that was my bit. It was then to hand over to someone else or to other members that joined that group to actually continue facilitating that group. So I didn't become a gatekeeper of that group or that community, that actually that's free for anyone to join in and listen to and learn from as well.
Yeah, just to jump in there, one of the people that I was part of that program in terms of the diverse trainers group, and worked with probably a friend and a guy that I've known for a long time, Conrad Taylor, that I think many people do know on the podcast. FE was a home for me and a space for me for 17 years before I moved out of it. And Conrad, probably one of the most influential people in terms of friend, but also support, some of the stuff he was doing. And I've seen literally Conrad flourish and grow through your support, Lawrence, in terms of what he's doing. And I think just to link into that, I also joined a group in 2020, I think it was. It might be 2019. I'm getting old. COVID also froze in many years, so I don't even really know what decade it is. But there was a growth of a group called, and apologies if I get this incorrect, I think it was the FE, Further Education Black Leadership Group. And there was a conference hosted by Google in collaboration. And actually, some of the voices on there were inspirational because they gave that space an opportunity. There wasn't and still isn't a representation in terms of black leadership in further education colleges. But actually what that was an opportunity for was people like Conrad, that maybe leadership is misunderstood in further education, that actually leadership can be many, many layers down and is still leadership. It can be leading a group of students. It can be leading a group of individuals. It can be actually leading a whole organization. And I think that definition of leadership needs to change. And I think I was challenged on it when I was in education of what can you talk about leadership? Shouldn't that be the executive leadership team? I disagree. And I think it's about creating leadership at all levels. We can never grow a diverse leadership if actually we're not allowing people that are potentially going to grow into those roles speak about it. And I think just to kind of call on that actually, Abid, I don't know if you want to come in there.
For me, there are three aspects or three words that I would use to describe what should make up the base foundation of a good community, and as understanding, empathy, and opportunity. Because I go back to when, you know, before when I didn't have these communities, and I'd go to conferences and see people there on stage giving keynote presentations, and you know, for me there was never the aspiration was there to be on those stages delivering those keynotes, but I didn't feel that the opportunity was there. And there was that imposter syndrome that, about, you know, being up there, that what have I got to say that people want to hear? And I think that's where the empathy and understanding comes in, that, you know, not everyone starts at, you know, 100% or, you know, 10 out of 10. And everyone has to start somewhere. And giving people those opportunities to be part of those communities, that's why I think it's right that whenever you join a community, ultimately everyone is that the lurker, you know, and everyone wants to learn and get the feel for what that community is and feel for that belonging. And then that's where you have to understand, like you say, Stephen, where you're at the conferences and you've got those circles. If that circle is tightly closed and there's no opportunity to wiggle your way into the circle, then there's no understanding there that people want to be part of that, you know, want to be part of that communication. And I think giving people those opportunities, something that really helped me, and as tiny as it might seem, you know, I've spoken at loads of conferences now and things like that, but I remember back in, I think it was 2017, when someone said to me, I want you to deliver a 1-minute demo slam, you know, 60 seconds, a demo slam. And I thought, you know, it was the most nerve-wracking thing ever. You know, it's not a 30-minute keynote or something like that where people are going to ask me questions. It was just 60 seconds. And you know, starting with that bite-sized opportunity, giving people that opportunity to get up there on stage and share what they're doing, share the magical things that they do on a daily basis, you know, and the reaction you get after that, you know, the applause and the thanks and people coming to you afterwards to have that conversation, to say, I really liked what you said, and that, and then understanding that, you know, people have to have that stepping stone to get onto the bigger platforms, and giving those opportunities there. And I think that's where, if your community is always built around empathy and understanding and opportunity, then you will see that thrive of that community grow, and then those people, those lurkers, then becoming an active part of that community and engaging because they feel comfortable to do so, because you've built the community with the right foundation, having that understanding, empathy, and opportunity.
It's interesting, isn't it? Listening to all of the comments there, and what I'm hearing from my lens is trust, is that these communities are building a space where people trust the people that are in the community and they can share their voice. One thing that I'd like to add to that too is the idea of time and space. I'm actually quite fond of talking about that generally across education, but as far as communities are concerned, and Abid knows, oh, he's on the other side of me on StreamYard, there we go. I get my time zones wrong often because there's so many different people joining in. I host a Sunday Sparks Twitter Spaces, and I often get my time zones wrong. And of course, different parts of the world change their time zones at different times of the year as well. And I think that's really important to remember too, is that we talked about having a mission, or values or vision about what you want for your community, if that does include people that are outside of your local area, things to keep in mind like that are time zones and when can we be inclusive in the times in which we have events too. Other things as well, like we talked a little bit about access. And so not everybody may have access to things like even on the Twitter spaces. For example, if you host a Twitter space, some people tune in from their laptop and don't have access then to join by microphone to verbally share their voice. However, if you invite them and encourage them to share on the hashtag, for example, or in the Twitter space thread, you can always pull their voice by text into the Twitter space nest. So it's finding alternative ways to value people's voices in different modalities. Although our community might be a podcast, which is lovely and very grateful to be here, although the community may be elsewhere, like EduFuturists, you also have a blog, right, that you share out and then you go to events as well. And I heard at the event recently that you have possibly a new community launching soon too. So it's that idea of like what else is available to make sure that everybody's included. But I do think time, space, those who don't necessarily feel confident just yet to share their verbal voice, like what other platforms can we provide or share to help them to feel included?
Yeah, well, Dan knows all about time zones, don't you, Dan? So Dan came out to Hong Kong to speak at the AI roundtable we did. Did you sleep at all, Dan?
Very, very little. But I got to see some amazing sunrises over Hong Kong. So thanks, Ian.
And I think I'm just trying to put a picture over what Georgina's just been saying, because you're absolutely right, Georgina. You know, here we are trying to build a global community. Here we are trying to learn from each other. And I think we're going to have to iterate how we do it, because it isn't like I'm just chatting to somebody this morning from Singapore. So they're going to bed while I'm having my lunch, you know, and it's, you're not in the same place. You know, we had a call. I think there was someone in San Francisco, there was me, and then there was someone in Hong Kong. And the difference between someone waking up in the morning and someone going to bed at night, and you're trying to have a valid conversation when everyone's in a different place. And I think there's a lot for us to learn about this. And I mean, Al's absolutely right. The way we welcome, empower, and we focus people and get them to share their voices if we know they've got something to say and they're not able to, is all part of this empowering the community. Because that's what leaders do, isn't it? They don't manage people. They enable people to be the best they can be. And that's a really complex thing. And if you bring culture and time zone and when you go to sleep and when you wake up and when you do things, it's, but I think it's a really exciting, wicked problem to have. And I'm really excited about learning more about it so that we can get people from all different cultures and races involved in these communities.
Can I just tag on the end there? All these paths for me lead to a common kind of ambition in many ways, because irrespective of the reason why people don't feel part of a community, don't join communities, don't contribute in communities, often it always comes back to the same narrative. And we see it in all walks of life. I think it always comes down to that sense of imposter syndrome. Either I don't feel I've got something to add, or everybody else around the table's got more experience than me, or they're older than me, or they're more technical than me. And often all of the things we're trying to resolve are about people feeling that they have a voice and it has a purpose. And I think when it comes to the adoption of technology, everyone around this room has had those conversations. When it comes to feeling like you want to get involved in a volunteering way within a school or a setting, those things all come together. So I kind of think that's the litmus test ultimately, is do you have a group where everybody doesn't feel an imposter but actually feels they're part of it?
Okay, this is a live learning session. Dan, get your pen out. How do we create this? Georgina gave the game away. We verbalized it at the conference. We're going to launch. Anybody want to come in? How do we create this space? How do we prevent imposter syndrome for any community that we create? What are your best tips listening, writing, only joking. But no, for anybody that's part of it, how and anybody that's building a community start to be is part of a community that doesn't feel like they could join or have been invited. How can we create this space to make sure nobody feels like an imposter? Is that
of behavior, Steve? I think ultimately you have to start with modeling what is the way that you would have people treat yourself, and also having the courage as a community of calling out when people perhaps don't. And I think that's often tough because nobody wants to put their head above the parapet. But all of us in different ways have been involved in building communities at some level, maybe intentionally, maybe unintentionally. But ultimately, it always comes down to if you set the tone, that there's an expectation that you hope others will follow. And I think, ironically, you know, I didn't train as a teacher, but, you know, from an education perspective, modeling behavior, modeling best practice is something that's bread and butter for many of the members of the group. But I think often in social media, there's that, the digital disinhibition, for example. People tend to be more open with the way that they might communicate than they would do face to face. And I think it's that mindfulness of just setting it and leading by it. And I think that's why we often bring familiar faces together, because there's people that understand and get it and go out of their way to try and model that and set the example for other communities being set up.
Perfect.
It's about shared purpose as well, Steve, isn't it? It's about shared purpose. You know, it's knowing where you're going and clarifying that in an inclusive way, that it's not a finished thing. As Al was on the safeguarding one with me, I don't think we got near to working out advice for schools on safeguarding. It'd be nice to have five little things. You say, hey, if you do these five, everything's going to be fine. We didn't get close to it, you know? And I think it's about understanding the right questions that we should be asking and the right conversations that we should be having. And if you do that, then there's space. Like you said, the nudge thing, you create space in a circle where people stand around, you create space in the question for people to answer from whatever context they come, and have no wrong answers and no stupid questions, because there aren't any stupid questions and there aren't any wrong answers if you're trying to build a learning community, a community that learns together. And that way it can be equitable and inclusive.
What's that? Louise?
I think being really clear about your intent, and, you know, we've talked about purpose and we've talked about values, and I think being really, really crystal clear from the outset, and I say this and with a really kind of sneaking suspicion around some of the communities that exist and how they're commanded more for marketing. And I guess, you know, and I do see that quite a bit. And, you know, obviously I'm involved in technology industries where they have created a community for marketing purposes. And I guess from my own practice, I do try and be really authentic and I try and be really helpful and I try and celebrate people's contributions and aligning with Lawrence's values and the work that he's been doing. We try and make sure that we're being really inclusive and diverse with people that we have on our webinars, for example, as a very starting point. But so I do think now that people are being more careful about the communities that they join and looking at the intent behind their communities. So rather than just creating an echo chamber or another iteration of a community that exists for a particular purpose, if you're setting out exactly why it is, who benefits from it, you know, the fact that you're volunteers, the fact that you're doing this for, you know, a specific reason, that's got to transcend anything, because I think communities do get commended for marketing purposes a lot. And that makes me really quite nervous about some of the things that I see on Twitter and the large communities with thousands and thousands and thousands of people. I think they are more of a channel for marketing. Sorry, that's something I just feel really quite strongly about. Might be a bit of a curveball in the discussions, but I think, you know, sometimes we just need to use our own critical skills and think a bit more deeply about why some communities exist.
Well, that dropped the mic, in it? Perfect. Well, no, I agree. I think, yeah, no, it is. And I totally agree. Dan, have you made a note of that? Don't put it on social media that we're going to do it. Don't try and market it as a talk. No, I'm joking. I do see it. I've been part of them and left them, I'll be honest.
Yeah, for sure. If someone's trying to sell you something, to use the community. And, you know, it's really interesting. And, you know, I think most of us have been in a position where we've, you know, worked in education and then worked in the industry or been closely aligned to an tech industry provider. And I mean, it is a legitimate strategy, isn't it, to in marketing to have influencers and build communities around products. And I do think that people who belong to those communities should question why they're part of that community. Is it that they're being sold something, or is it genuinely a community that's going to be for their benefit? And I think that in the future, we might see people being even more critical of that kind of marketing to communities. So I think being really clear about your intent from the start is a really good way to begin. I know I didn't mean to drop the mic.
No, no, you didn't. No, you didn't. I think whether you're in one or whether you've been tried to be added to seven different ones on LinkedIn, every day is a different community that gets popped up. And I don't even know what the acronym is.
But they can definitely help you with you promoting your podcast and get you 50,000 new followers on LinkedIn. Surely they can.
The less balanced. There's another argument. I mean, I totally agree, but I also think it's about eyes wide open. You know, many of our industry trade shows and events are communities, and there's a trade-off that you accept and acknowledge that people might be trying to push their wares, but in parallel, you get access to loads of free CPD and other resources. Something has to be funded by something else. I think it's about transparency, that point you raised, which is as long as you're clear on the purpose of the community and people feel like they're getting more than they're being asked to give, then absolutely. But you vote with the unfollow ultimately, don't you? But I think that transparency is absolutely key.
Definitely.
And I was going to add to that. Yeah, thanks, Stephen. I was going to add to that and say, at the end of the day, we all have a choice, right? And hopefully, if we're abiding by the, you know, the age restrictions, we're all adults when we're opting into social media. And when we choose to join a community, you know, hopefully we're taking the time to either read about their mission and vision or reach out and ask somebody what their experience is. Maybe there's reviews of the community somewhere we can read as well. So I think there needs to be some accountability on the person joining the community as a shared responsibility, let's say, to understand what they're stepping into, what's involved of them, and how their data is being used to market them or not, you know. So, you know, hats off. I know Al talked a little bit about that earlier with the different sponsors and whatnot. You know, usually they'll tell you, you know, we're going to use your images or your video will be, etc. So it's just about really being informed and that it is our choice to join or not. You know, it's always a different story if we choose to join based on what we've read or, you know, ticked off on the checklist and then that changes. That's a different story. But hopefully we're making informed decisions. And then the other point I was really hoping to add to that sparked off of what Al was saying when he said, Steve, we have to model it. You know, when you asked, what will this community look like? I was really thinking about consistency. And I was thinking about why some things still keep going the way they do. When we consistently model what we hope to see by giving into the community, what we hope to receive back, I think that's important. But also consistency in time, like find a time that works for your community by asking them. So if you look at it from, you know, even in education, I was going to say product lens, but even in education lens, you know, we talk about personalizing teaching and learning for kids. Well, let's ask people. If you're creating a space where you hope to learn from other people in your community, then ask them, when would be a good time for you? What do you want to talk about? What do you want this to look like? So, Stephen, I think that's great. Your podcast is going to go viral. Let people comment on the comments and in the links, you know, and share with you guys what they want to see. You know, you've got some ideas from this panel, but like everybody else is out there too, right? So so find out what they want and make a consistent approach to it, I think is also key.
Amazing.
Been trying to go viral for 5 years. Still at it, though, Georgina. We've not found that magic dust yet. Jack's still not there with his beans. Well, joking. We're doing all right. Abid, what do you think?
I think it's again, just about having that good foundation, but also, you know, celebrating the community, celebrating the people who you bring on as the sort of founding members of the community. I guess whilst we need to make the community an open place for everyone, even for people who aren't, you know, as boisterous as us, shall we say, you do need that marketing power, shall we say. You still do need that, it helps to have that kind of star power, doesn't it, to help kick off the community. But then, you know, even if you don't, it's not the end of the world. I mean, if we're talking the Edge of Futurist community here, if you ask me, you guys have already got a great platform. It's not like you haven't been doing podcasts for the last, you know, however many years that, you know, thousands of people around the world listen to. I think you've got a good starting point there as it is anyway. And if anything, I'd say, what took you so long? But I think that's just it, is that, you know, once you open those doors, I think people will definitely flock in. But then, you know, it comes back to that empathy and understanding piece, where it's like, you know, making sure to show that, you know, all of those voices are welcome. There's opportunities for all of those voices to be shared in the community. And I think just regularly celebrating people within the community as well, you know, giving that opportunity for people to spotlight, shall we say. And it's something that we did with Global GEG, was people were recognizing us as the founders. But one thing that we really wanted to make sure was people saw all of the other people who weren't necessarily as crazy as we are. And so, you know, we'd regularly have a spotlight, the leader, every week on all of our social media platforms and things like that. And I think having something like that from within the community, across social media, giving people that opportunity to grow, those people who don't necessarily have that bigger following, for example, giving them that opportunity, and then people who aren't then a part of that community seeing that, oh, look, this person's had that opportunity, and you know, I'd like that opportunity as well. And I think that, you know, being able to have that as an as sort of an enticing piece for joining the community, I think would probably work wonders.
Definitely, thanks, Abid. And Lawrence, any thoughts in regards to anything that's been discussed?
I think with the original question you said about what would be your advice, my advice about starting a community, what's your why? Why? I think if you understand why you're doing it, is it to empower people, to amplify voices, to connect people? I think that starts with the foundation of it as well. I think about transparency as well. And I also think, like, with any community, get rid of the gatekeepers. There are too many communities that have gatekeepers, you know, in there. And I think it's about everyone having a collective voice in some way. You know, it may look different for everyone. You know, we might not be as loud as Ben, you know, but we still love him. He puts his glasses on like he's about to come back. But no, seriously, I think, look, with what the three of you were doing, you came together to have a conversation about education, and look where it is now. So for me, the foundations and everything is already there. I think it's about transparency, why, people, connections, and allowing people to be their authentic self in a community too.
Fantastic. We're coming towards the end of the time now. Normally on a round table, someone would chip in and say, can we go around and can everyone give their 10-second final remarks? Let's not do that, because nobody likes doing that, do they? It's like, it's a pointless exercise. So, thank you so much for joining us, and for your free consultancy. We really appreciate it. It's no, but I was thinking, to be honest, I was thinking about halfway through, I was just because I was just enjoying it as a spectator, I think, more than anything. I was just thinking, this is going to make a quality episode. I was thinking, if I came across this episode, I'd really enjoy listening to it. There's a lot of wisdom in there, and I think we've all learned from each other, but I think people are going to learn from you guys. So thank you so much for giving your time up, and you could be outside having a barbecue now and enjoying the warm weather, but you've chose to come in and join us and help us continue this community. So thank you so much for your time, and we will see you all very soon. Thank you.
See you soon. Thanks, everyone.
Thank you.
Thanks, everyone.
1, 2, 3, 4.
Well done.
Brilliant.